Good afternoon, everyone. It is Thursday, September 11th, 2025, and it is 12:11 p.m. on September 11th. We will call to order the Board of the Austin Housing Authority Board of Commissioners regular board meeting, the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board of Directors regular meeting, and the Austin Affordable PFCE Board of Directors board meeting. So with that, I'll ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll.
Mr. Commissioner.
President, we have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 12:12 p.m. Next item on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'd ask Commissioner Apostolo to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. There are no people in the citizens, no one signed up for the citizens' communication, so we will go to the citywide advisory board report.
Good morning, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. Okay. The citywide board advisory meeting minutes for HACA board September 11, 2025. Meeting is called to order at 10:30. Look at the citywide president calling me. Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome. Lupe Garcia, Citywide Board President, called the meeting to order at 10:33 a.m. Veronica Castillo Perez, Citywide Board Vice President, read the minutes from the last Citywide Board meeting. Lupe Garcia provided a special report. Citywide Board balance is $3,000. Presentation, Michael Gerber, CEO. Congratulations to the August activities with the HACA residents. It was a busy month with back to school and the Yes Incentive Shift with visit HUD Administrator Ashley Quinones and a wonderful lunch with IMOM to celebrate the 9% tax credit for Santa Rita. Yes. Michael Ross, Vice President of PAMI, thank you to Santa Rita residents. 100% have been registered for the relocation finals. Austin Pathways updates Liliana Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development. The National Night Out is Tuesday, October 7th at 5 p.m. Please invite your neighbors to come and celebrate an evening to promote safety and security with the Austin Police Department and first responders. Diamond Green, Youth Education and FSS Manager. In addition to Boys and Girls Clubs and communities in schools, we are looking to expand the youth educational service at other HACA properties. Janet Pinoza, Workforce Development and Digital Inclusion Manager, Urban and Culture Fest Workforce is on Friday, September the 12th at the Moody Amplifier. Amphitheater. HACA is celebrating with AAUL and Goodwill ACC, Travis County, Job Fair at Chalmers on September 17th from 10 to noon. Ramen Lee, bringing health home manager. We have lunch three other cancer education classes this month and the ninth part of the health and digital literacy program. Meeting adjourned was by Charlie Thompson, president of Coronado, made a motion to adjourn the meeting, and Rose Brandon, secretary of Coronado, seconded the motion. Meeting adjourned at 10:21 a.m. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
You have a balance. You have a balance in your account.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that money come from?
It is sponsored by the Housing Board. So we do have a citywide advisory board budget line item in the Austin Pathways budget. And so initially we would use it for refreshments when we would meet in person, but we did use it for a HUD training during our resident council elections, and we brought somebody from HUD to train all of the brand new officers. We use it for training, for education, and also for anything citywide activities that are across all the properties.
Like an event or something.
I know that, right.
Mm-hmm. What balance do you usually have in there? Is it now you've got 3,000, maybe is there an amount you try to keep?
Well, we request about 5,000 every fiscal year is that what we only request. And so that also allows for the officers, if there are any activities that they would like to promote, if there's a health activity, then we know for sure that we have some sort of funding in order to bring those services.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir.
Lucas, could you share with the board the conversation that took place with the legal ministry from HUD? It's really kind of special day. My mom did a great job, I think.
It was amazing. This lady was really, really, I want to say this is like, she brought us in like down to earth. And she spoke to some of the IMAs individually. I heard her ask some questions, and I was so proud of the IMAs, the way they were answering with a lot of respect for her. And before she left, she did take my hand and that we were doing a very good job with serving the community, because I explained to her, we don't just offer HACA properties, we offer our services to the outside community. And so she was very pleased to hear that we were engaging with the community and not just within our properties, because that brings all of us back together, I guess. And my whole thing was just like, we're 18 properties, but at the end of the day, we're just one community. So it was really, really nice, and I really enjoyed it. She says she wants to come back.
That's right. And she is President Trump's representative, which is a group of official administration. They've had it. And Bobby Wilkinson, who's the executive
director.
Yes. Well.
Mm-hmm. And he was really nice. He asked some questions, though. But he was nice. He like, you know, it was so, this HUD meeting and with these, there was three of them. Who was the third one?
Her name is Sable Coleman. She's a special advisor to the legal ministry.
Sure.
She's like in policy. And
mm-hmm.
Yes, we always have questions. It's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a really good feedback from them, so I was really excited that it was a little different, but we would love to have them back.
And then the second question I have to say is we talked a little bit about resident relocation in Santa Rita.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to talk about that in a few minutes.
Okay.
But you and I had a really important conversation the other day on the Citywide Advisory Board call. And I think it's important. It's fun. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
People are being asked to step away from their homes and their community and to take a chance that for 2.5 to 3 years, they have to be scattered. And knowing it's not going to look the same when they come back. And that's a tough thing. And I just wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing with the board, because I think relocation is grounded and we've got to get it right. And I just wanted, I appreciate your leadership on the whole thing. And I just wanted you to share, because we're getting ready to move.
Correct.
A couple months we'll be moving. And I wanted you to share a little bit about how you're, we can talk about the policy of it in a few minutes, but just how you're feeling about it. Because it's hard.
My personal feeling is that it's just not the moving that's kind of affecting me. What it is that I've been there only 10 years, but there's a lady that's been there 32 years. But to me, it's like my whole world. when you have little kids coming up to you and calling you grandma. Just the other day, the little kids that are behind me, they said, grandma, we're leaving. We're going to move. And I said, I know you are. I'm so excited for you. But the one thing that really got to me was that he said, but grandma, nobody's going to be here to walk you back home, because this little boy, when he sees me walking home, he takes my hand to make sure that I don't fall. And he goes, and nobody's going to be able to walk you. And I said, but I'm going to be extra careful, and I'm going to get somebody else to walk me. He goes, okay, but remember, you first open the screen door, and then you unlock the door, and then you step in. And, you know, and for the relocation, it is not moving far away. It is what you're leaving behind. And it's so different for me and a lot of kids. I've grown to be with them. And I've seen them go, and I've seen them left, and they've graduated, and some are going to college now. But it is a place of heart and a place of love and compassion. So I don't know if all the other places that were redeveloped were the same feelings, because we all have different feelings. I think because we're such a tight community, and outside, even people from the outside community have come and asked us what can they do to help us, how they want us to, you know, if we need help packing, do we need help doing this, and that amazes me to know that we represent a lot out there for Haka, and it gives us a great pleasure, and I tell everyone, and I will always keep my word, number one, I do not ever break Haka rules. So don't ask me for something, because I'm going to tell you no. Number two, I always tell everyone, respect Haka employees, and employees will respect you. Number three, be compassion. Don't judge each other. We all live in the same place, and we're here for a reason. We're here for opportunity. We're here for love. We're here to be able to move forward to greater things. And those are my feelings for Santa Rita. I just feel different because I am that person. My whole goal, and Mary knows this, when we have meetings, who eats first? The kids. We order for IMAs, we order for events, and the first thing, the rule is kids eat first. Because you never know if that's the meal they're going to have. And so that's how we're going to be where we're at now. And the kids know that. And the moms know that. Kids first. So we walk all together. And those are my feelings. I know I get emotional, but it's not because I'm sad. It's I'm happy. I'm happy in my journey. And I hope within the 3 years, I'll be able to do what I'm doing now. But not, I'm always saying, I will pass the torch.
Thank you, Mike and Lalani. It would seem to me that since we've done this a number of times, that maybe there's an opportunity to assemble a group of residents who have moved and moved back, and they can share their stories with those who are in the process of moving, because if they can learn from their experiences, you know, all the anxieties. Yeah, because what Luffy and those residents are going through, the other residents went through as well, how they dealt with it, and then the feeling of joy being able to come back. And then there were some who didn't come back because they had better opportunities. So I think, you know, having a small group from different sites who have gone through this that can sort of always be there for others when they go through that, that would be sort of a good thing to have that discussion.
Anne Gaster for Stupid Housing Initiative. Our intern, Susie Richardson, and I think you all, not here today, but I think you all have met, she has strong survey and data skills, and so she's actually been working for the past 6 months, and part of her duties have been surveying residents who relocated, particularly out of Chalmers. and asking the best practices, what worked, what didn't, why they came back, or why they didn't. So we actually have some survey results that we can compile and share with the board so you can see what we've done. The idea of a focus group, though, I think is interesting to me. When you get people together in a group, they tend to get different results, so you can expand that survey to maybe include this too.
So, residents are moving out now.
We got our 90-day notice already, so our letter says December 2nd for to completely move out.
So, what's the time frame for the reconstruction and for the first move back?
So, by the end of the year, we will have everybody move out of property. February, we hope to be started with renovation. And then in the early summer, we can start construction.
When we get to this that item,
yeah.
And the word will come
up.
Okay.
One second, there's a couple of reports here that you just had out of the meeting. But, anything else you want to share on the citywide report?
No, I just want to let you know that we have a good relocation team. Though I might knock on the door way too many times, but all I'm asking is questions, you know, that residents don't feel comfortable asking, and assuring them that they're there for us. And we don't have nothing to worry about. So that's about it. National Night Out, I want to mention, though, that's our last event. And we're going to make it as big as we can with everything. We're also having Travis County bringing out the voter registration machines for teaching us all the ones that have never registered before how to work them. And we're going to have a huge, huge impact. I have like 7 outside volunteers that are going to be passing out flyers and promoting that we at Santa Rita will be putting tables outside, and we're going to have people register them if they're not registered, and it's going to include the whole community so that they can feel free to come out and say, hey, we went to Santa Rita, and that's where we registered, and I remember that. And so we're going to make that a big event also. So, but Terrace, a lot of people from Travis County will be there.
Any further questions on the citywide report? If not, great. Rubik, thank you. Why don't you stay there for just a second?
Okay.
Commissioners, with your indulgence, since we're on top of Santa Rita, would you mind, Madam Chair, if we...
We have a board to go upstairs.
Okay. If you don't mind, why don't we move to the Austin Affordable Housing Agenda real quick? And we go to pick up item number 5, I believe, which is the item involving Santa Rita Court Street. And we'll hand come forward, and if you have come forward, and we'll turn over to Chair Sherrington to share this item. I don't think it will be a long presentation, but that's the board of work, so give us just a couple minutes.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Again, my name is Ann Gass. I'm the Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for the Housing Authority. We're here to present on Resolution 277. With me today, I have Jonathan Gary, who's a Development Associate with Carlton Companies. You all remember Jonathan. You know Will, who works with him. Carlton has worked with us on Chalmers and Rosewood, and now again on Santa Rita. And then fantastic partners. So he's here to help me answer questions. And also, again, Tiffany Topher, who is our Resident Section Project Manager, who's heading up the relocation efforts at Santa Rita, and also did Rosewood and Chalmers. So we're all here to answer your questions. The last thing we saw about Santa Rita was in May. We had an indecent resolution for the bonds. And as you all know, we've done a few of these together. This is a multi-step process, right? So we are in step 2 of 3 steps that will be coming to you on these projects. And I always like to start with this slide. This is the site map as we see it today. So we have, this is the original 1939 site. We call it the bungalows, the preservation units. Those are the ones on the National Register of Historic Places. This one, we have the two
school units that are newer, but still older adult recipients. So all of these units can have this now with our relocation, and this is easy to stay. So let me
show you what we now have in store. So this is the current site plan. There's been a few iterations of this, but this is where we are today. So to remember, we've already spoken about Santa West. We got a 9% tax credit application, and this is the section of the property that will be Santa West, and it does include the pre-K, which is the building on the far left side of the screen. So you all have seen that one. You know that we're working on a partnership to get that pre-K up and running, and that's 96 units. But today we want to focus on Santa East, so this includes that East End building and all the bungalows that we will be preserving. So this is the first look, hot off the presses. We have some renderings of what the new Santa Rita Courts will look like. This is the view from Second Street. If you're standing on Second Street looking at Santa Rita, and to the left is Santa Rita West, and to the right is Santa Rita East, and those are some secure gates that will have resident entry into the courtyard areas. We've got two beautiful courtyards that we're going to be programming. Here's another shot. This is the office at Santa Rita East. So you're standing as if you're back just to the renovation buildings, and you're looking westward toward the property. It's a really beautiful building, beautiful design by Nelson Partners. This is like, oh, yes, Commissioner. It does. One of the things that we heard from the residents from the very beginning at Chalmers was they coveted their own, they valued their own outdoor space, their own personal outdoor space, and they were losing that as we got rid of the building that we had before. So this allows for a little bit of that. And this, I love this one because it really activates the space, seeing all the families out there playing on the playground. This is standing in the courtyard at Santa Rita East, looking toward the community room there, with the lights coming from the awning, and then the building on the left is Santa Rita West. So these renderings show how really interconnected this property will be. It's going to feel like one big community when we're all finished. But we are building it into two different stages. That's why we have to kind of concentrate on East today. The other thing we have is our bungalow rendering. Clearly, these aren't as detailed. We don't have all the landscaping in. There'll be a lot of landscaping. We're looking at having a sport court, some historic commemoration in this side. We're still working on that. But I wanted you to see. I think all of you have been by Rosewood at some point. It's all very similar. We'll remove the paint from the bricks, we'll take off the pitched roof, and we'll have what it looked like back in 1939 when President Johnson was watching this site.
Well, I would actually say you all haven't been to Rosewood to see the preservation. You've seen it from the outside, but really just 2 weeks ago when we had the legal administrator here, we were finally able to go inside, and we could see how they reworked the inside of one of these preservation buildings. Because I don't think any of us had any idea how lovely to come out.
They really are beautiful. It's so exciting. I can't wait to show it off to y'all. I think, Lupe, did you get a chance to see those?
No?
Okay. They're really, really spectacular and exciting. And it's well, yeah. More on that later. So a little bit about what we're gonna be building here. So right now at Santa Rita we have 97 units with this PDRA subsidy. We already talked about we're building 96 units at Santa Rita West, but today we're talking about Santa Rita East. So we've got 104 units coming at Santa Rita East for a grand total of 200. So the 97 PDRA units will come back, and we'll add 104 units to just a little more than double the number of units. And I always like to include this slide. I know that you all are interested in the affordability of the units, so you can see we've got 30s, 50s, 60s, and we do have a handful of market rate units. We have talked over the years about the value that a few market rate units bring to a property and flexibility with returning residents. People can use vouchers. So we think it's important to have a few market rate units out of development. So this is our affordability breakdown. Then we talk timeline. So Commissioner Carrington, you had asked about the timeline. So let me walk through this a little bit. So again, we start resident relocation. Folks will start moving here within the next 30 days. The bond lottery, so we're hoping to fund this by bonds, but it is a lottery. So that bond lottery will occur in November. If we are successful, we will then submit our tax credit application. We'll actually submit the application in January of 2026. I have December 2025. Yeah, we'll have it ready a little early, but we'll actually submit the application in in January of 2026. That is when we expect to finish relocation and be able to go ahead and demolish. And we're demolishing ahead because we have a very, very strict timeline with the 9% tax credit. And we have to have a TCO by the end of 2027. So getting that demolition out of the way early just gets us a head start on that, on the construction. The hope is to close the West project in May of 2026. We hope to close the East project right behind that in June of 2026. So those will be coming back to you with all the financing partners and all the numbers and all the documents in April, maybe-ish, this spring. So it will be coming back to you before closing. And then, again, we have to have construction complete at West by the end of 27, and East will come soon behind in sometime in mid-2028. And here we have, I want to add a couple pictures of our relocation meeting. You can see these meetings are packed. Tiffany and her team have been doing everything they can to get everybody together. We've had a lot of group meetings. Every single resident at Santa Rita has now had a one-on-one meeting with our relocation team, probably multiple, but certainly one, where they go through a very detailed checklist and find out all the needs of that family. So those have all taken place. 100% of the residents of Santa Rita are on the Rosewood waiting list, and 100% of the residents are on the wait list at, for other family properties to be able to transfer there. Yes.
Okay. How long is the waiting
list? So the wait list is long, but we got approval from HUD to put a preference in place that allows people who are subject to a HACA relocation action to jump to the top of the list. So HUD has approved that preference. So all of the residents who got on the wait list, we opened the wait list for the last week of August. And so all these Santa Rita families will jump to the top of the list. So as Brittany Baker is doing her admissions polls, the Santa Rita families are first on the list. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have these things up here, and I say 100% of these things have been done. None of these things, going through the interviews, getting on these wait lists, none of it is easy. It's taken a tremendous amount of time from the residents of Santa Rita, and I was at the first day of the opening of the wait list for the Tammy properties, and everybody showed up at 7:45, the wait list opened at 8, we had, you know, some issues with internet and bandwidth, and everyone was so patient and so committed and so willing to go through this process with us. So, and Lupe, you know, above all, there as a leader, encouraging people, answering questions, helping people understand what we're doing. So huge thank you to Lupe. And, you know, the rest of the Santa Rita people, residents aren't here, but they are really, really working hard to get us across the finish line here and being partners in this relocation. So can't say enough about this really fantastic group of residents that we have. And we're doing our best to find the best homes for all these families. It's just tough.
We're working across the portfolio, including working with some of our children and other options. So we want to get people near the things that they love, like school, healthcare, jobs, other things that they value. One challenge that we're working through now with Carlton, and I talked extensively with Jonathan and others on the Carlton team, is can we get some of those Rosewood units open? And we're working aggressively to get at least one building open, which would be of course, we saw the units, some units that the college left. So hopefully that some units can be paid there. But it's complicated. It's complicated.
So if some of these residents that are going to be relocated have an opportunity to go to Rosewood, what do they jump ahead of Rosewood residents that have been relocated and haven't come back yet?
No, we would work with we would work with our wait list, and we work with our CVR is doing our relocation for both, for both Rosewood and for Santa Rita. So we'll be making sure that everyone is treated fairly and that you know, that we're getting the right residents into the right unit based on the needs
all the Rosewood residents have first right to return.
I'm sorry.
All the Rosewood residents have first right to return. Hard stop, they do. So Tiffany's already identified all the residents that want to return. So they will all be able to come back.
At Rosewood,
yeah. They don't have to necessarily come back to the first building, though. They may be able to come back to later buildings. And they're all housed. So what we're working towards is this first building can be used for the Santa Rita relocation families, and then the Rosewood families can come back. The other units will be coming online within 90 days of those first units. So those Rosewood families can still come back. They just may come back in the second wave. But we also, we worked hard when the Rosewood waitlist opened. We were first on the scene with the applications for the Santa Rita residents to get them to the top of the waitlist. So they're at the top of the waitlist for when units come available.
No, absolutely not.
All the residents at Rosewood who are former residents have first right to return. Absolutely.
How many have indicated that they won't come back? 24 out of that, how many?
Yeah, there were 124 units and 10 were already vacant, so we relocated 114 families. And, you know, they've been gone now for 3 years, and they relocated with a voucher. And, you know, many of them are settled. And Tiffany's been in contact with them throughout. We've had several resident meetings. Everyone has been certainly given the opportunity if they want to come back. And, you know, we always remind ourselves that we celebrate choice in whatever form it comes in. We'd love to have everyone come back. But the fact that folks have the ability to exercise choice and stay where they are, it's a good thing. So we want to honor that as well. But boy, it would be nice to get some more back. But that's where we are.
So if my math is right, only 20% of those who relocated have indicated they're going to return.
Okay. In contrast to some forces, we were very different. Much higher numbers.
He did. Well, and part of that too came from the fact that we built Palmer South. So no one ever really left the neighborhood. No one left the community. Whereas at Rosewood, we didn't have a place right across the street. So folks had to keep their vouchers, and they were spread across the city. So it's just every project is just a little bit different in the way we have to approach this. And of course, this time we don't have vouchers, and we don't have a property across the street. So we're having to employ different relocation tactics. So it's getting on the Rosewood wait list, and it's getting the relocating to the Hawker properties as well.
So just thinking about another time I spent some reason going back to work. So you need to have a document that can be seen in the time, and that's okay.
We also have documented the reasons that they declined the return, because we know that that's part of what we need to report out on. So many people decided that they didn't want to come back because they felt like their children were stable and they appreciated the school they were in. Other people have started jobs and they're in the area that they live in. And then lots of people still wanted to maintain the flexibility to move if they're not wanting to stay in the area that they were currently in. So. Mm-hmm.
What's on the Santa Rita residence? Attended a relocation meeting. I know you've had several. I guess you've had several meetings.
I can't say for sure that all 97 have attended a group meeting, but all 97 have been met with individually if they couldn't go to a group meeting and sat down with our relocation teams. Yes, every single one of them. Yep.
So everybody's had an opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then the last thing I just want to
add that because every household picture is complex. And we didn't put up the slide, but we have partnerships with every nonprofit in town and every social service agency, and we're really working hard to try to, when folks see an obstacle, that's really where the tenant protection team comes up with figuring out the solution. And it's been giving people the assurance, and we've dealt with everything from, at this point, kind of the kids in the schools is the easiest thing. It's been the very personal thing that someone has a collection of plants, someone has a unique medicine.
people that they think they're going to be right there with that down payment. It's not really used by Foster Creek from that, you know, that position. So, you know, figuring out really unique individual stuff on the card. It's really hard stuff, and putting those, you know, and hooking more of you can do it so well. And Tiffany is where it comes from, just elevating. So, that's it. And it has a way to really talk about it.
And then the last thing I'll share, when we come back before closing, we'll have all the numbers for you. But I just want to share kind of the funding sources that we're looking at. So as we said, we're looking at 12% tax credit equity, do a conventional loan. Those are things we've done a lot. One thing we haven't done before is federal and state historic tax credits. As I said, the bungalow units are on the National Register. They are eligible for federal and state historic tax credits, so we're going to take advantage of that funding source. For this project. We've been in talks with the Texas Rural Commission about how that works, so we're feeling confident about those funds. We also have a plan to apply for City of Austin Rental Housing Development Assistance, which is ROTA funds. That may sound familiar because we got those for Rosewood. We also have been recommended for an award of ROTA funds for Santa Rita West. So for Santa Rita East, we expect to apply as well, and we've been in contact with the city staff, so they're expecting that application. Under Jonathan's leadership, we put in an application to the Federal Home Loan Bank, that's FHLB, Federal Home Loan Bank of Dallas, their affordable housing program, and we hope to be awarded next month, fingers crossed, $1.75 million from the Federal Home Loan Bank. And then we also, since we have a decent chance, with the National Park Service Saving America's Treasures Grant, that's $750,000, and the only properties that are eligible are properties on the National Register with national significance. I think we've talked about before that Santa Rita does fall into that category, so we hope that we'll be a good candidate for that. And then depending on how all of the things, all these bullet points at the top shake out, we'll have a HACA or an AAHP gap loan that will fill the gap. We do expect there to be a gap, but what that gap is remains to be seen based on how the other funding shakes out. We're still shopping lenders and investors. We're putting a model together. We've reached out to lenders for the most current credit pricing, the most current rates, understanding, as we all know, that those will shift a bit in the next 6 months before we close. But we're working to put together a model. And we're just really excited about this project. So I ask today for your approval for us to be able to proceed with the application at Santa Rita Court Trust.
Now you, Tyra.
Thank you very much. Can everyone hear me? Good. The historic tax credit, how much do you anticipate from the Fed and state?
Jonathan's got that right here. I want to say it's $4 million, but I'm looking for memory. Put this total together.
Yeah, the current total between the two would be about $12 million for the federal mission. It would be about $4.5 million between federal and state historic tax credits combined.
Are those easy to obtain?
I wouldn't say they're easy. They're easy to obtain. We do have an historic architect, Urban Foundry David Carroll, who Hawke has worked with a lot, and he's an historic architect, so he's helping us shepherd us through the process. We've had talks with the Texas Historical Commission, though. And they have told us that our application, our project, with UFA's help, is a very, very strong candidate. They feel very confident that we'll be able to be successful with the state and federal store tax credit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Question for Jonathan. Are the current market conditions, are the buyers of low-income housing tax credits, are historic credits the same for the state and federal? Is that sort of the same group of investors, or going to have to shop them to different investors?
It should be the same group. It's the pricing is a little bit different for the state historic tax credits. We're looking at kind of upper 80s right now. Whereas when you look at the federal historic tax credits, we just got quoted the other day, kind of in the lower 80s, around 84. But, ideally we get the same person to try to give us all that money in one slug, but we're going to look at all different options.
And would the goal then be to also have them be the investors in the low-income housing tax credit?
If that's what they do, different investors have different goals with the floods of money. If you look at larger organizations, they'll have complete departments. You know, one hallway is just dedicated to the federal tax credits. They'll have another hallway, you know, right down the building that focuses on historic tax credits sometimes. So, you know, the bigger the organization, more likely the answer could be yes. But the same answer remains. We want to get the best pricing from the best partner for this project.
And that may involve dealing with multiple investors.
Right. And that's something we've done in the past. It hasn't been an issue. Really, the most important thing is getting the right pricing and just taking a good look at the contract with everyone's counsel and making sure that the terms are amenable to getting the project done, getting it done on time, and getting the tax credit.
Did we apply for historic credits from Rosewood?
We didn't. Because we weren't keeping all of the historic buildings, we weren't eligible. The reason we're eligible here is because we're keeping all of those bungalows.
It's 100%.
Yeah.
And was that true with the state historic tax credit also?
Yeah. We definitely vetted it for Rosewood.
Because
the state
mirrors federal in the federal.
In that way, yes. I mean, I can't speak to all aspects of it. We'll be able to tell you when we're done with this project. But for that purpose, yeah. Yeah. And the Texas Historical Commission shepherds both, so they'll take the state historic tax credits, obviously, but their recommendations to the federal regulators. The way we understand it is that the textual commission recommends it federal, but that's just the funds of it. So. What? Yep.
So, Commissioner, you've gotten a broad overview of the entire project.
Let me ask one more question. Suzanne, you know, the fourth. Do you know Steve LaFleur from Monarch? You got to reach out to him because Monarch, they have four different silos, and they do historical preservation tax credits. Because they're Monarch is a tax syndicate, so they do energy, film, historical, and tax. Okay. Steve LaFleur, who's with Monarch. It's Monarch Private Ventures. They're based out of Atlanta. And Steve is in the housing, in their housing silo. But they do, so every, if you ever look at the end of a movie and you see the credit and you see that Georgia Peach, the firm, did the tax credits for that film.
I was just going to simply clarify what you all, you've heard a lot. What you're specifically voting on today, this pathway to center, Redeport to Eastern, you're making it clear that you can apply for the 4% tax credit.
And it's resolution 00277. Do I hear a motion? Second, any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion passes. Thank you. Go back to Dallas and go to work.
Commissioner, for your endorsement.
Thank you for being here.
We'll go back to the main hockey agenda. And item number one, which is the consent agenda and approval of the 4-minute summary for the board meeting that was held on August 21st, 2025. Second home moves to approve. Dr. Stoll is second. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed? And the minutes are now approved. So now we'll go to action item number two, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 2910, approving and renewing, approval to renew the comprehensive youth development program contract for Boys and Girls Club at Chalmers, Booker T. Washington, and Medicaid. And Boys and Girls Club friends are going to come forward. Mr. Argus here is favored with everybody, and Elani, and everyone else is here. Of course, last month, the board had an opportunity to get a thorough briefing on the program. So hopefully this item will go somewhat quickly. The action that you're being asked to take today is to approve a contract for 2 years $120,000 total, $210,000 annually. Of course, this is reporting on different performance.
Yes. Yes. So thanks. Thank you so much. Yes, we have our Boys and Girls Club. So last month, the Boys and Girls Club had an opportunity to answer your questions. And so they did provide just a follow-up presentation because we covered the summer program. So now we're going to be covering what's ahead of the school year. And then towards the end, with our, after the review, then we'll do the program recommendations to extend the contract for 2 years. It was 1 year last time. I also wanted to let you know that back in 2024, we did have an entire request for proposal exercise. They received the contract. It's renewable up to 5 years. We are now in year two for this contract renewal. So with that, next slide, please. Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so as we all know, or should know, that we've had this partnership since 2008 with the Boys and Girls Club after school and in the summer break program. And they are currently at three of our HACA properties. That's Palmer, Meadowbrook, and BTW, or Booker T. Washington. And they usually serve a minimum of 250 undesignated HACA.
Can I hand over to Mr. Archie and Sidney Savino?
And again, just because I don't want to bridge the conversation, you know, that we do, and also on last month, so we're going to do the first version of this, and coming on the next one.
Well, hi, my name is Arthur Steele. I'm Director of Club Operations with Boys and Girls Club. I want to say thank you, and really just thank you for allowing us to be in your properties. So just kind of jumping into it, want to do a recap on summertime. Just make it real brief is that Boys and Girls Club, we all three facilities, we provided a summer camp. That was Monday through Friday. It was a 9-week summer program from June 2nd to August 1st. We are Monday through Friday, 8:30 in the morning to 5:30 p.m. by the weekly teams that included STEM, arts, sports, and health and wellness. We also provided academic success lessons to help support the summer learning loss. We brought in outside partners such as CVS and Girl Scouts to help go ahead and do STEM and enrichment camp and discovery program. Another highlight that we did was we brought in Jamal Charles, who's part of our board. He's a NFL superstar. A retired NFL superstar who also played for the University of Texas, and we were able to go ahead. He presented a football clinic that was hosted at Home Club, and so we were able to go ahead and bring Meadowbrook, BTW, and Chalmers over and have the kids participate in that clinic, and they got to meet Jamal Charles himself. The other highlight is that I know we focus a lot on doing sports for a lot of elementary kids. Well, we want to go ahead and kind of help support our littles and do a sport with our 5- and 6-year-olds, and we had a t-ball tournament where we go ahead and help them learn t-ball with all of our camps and all of our clubs, and then they got to participate in doing a tournament against all our other clubs. So yeah, just kind of jumping forward into our core program outcomes, just as a reminder that PDC core programming consists of four focus areas: academic success, workforce development, healthy lifestyles, and character and leadership. And so, in our last presentation, we kind of looked into the programs that we're providing for the next school year, and we looked into pretty much like what those programs were about and what they geared towards, like the elementary, middle school, and high school, just for those grades there. And so, what I did is, I went to our program team, and I sat down with them, and we wanted to go ahead and pull data for the programs that we're providing this upcoming school year. And so we looked into how do we collect that data. So we pretty much collect our data from surveys, and one of our biggest surveys that we have is called our National Youth Outcome Instrument. We call it our NYOI survey. That is our biggest survey that we pull our kids for. Actually pulling the kids on their actual club experience, their entire club experience. And also majority of these programs that we have, they each one of them have a pre-test and post-test. So looking forward, and this is the outcomes that we gathered for all the programs. So I'm going to gather just like a few of the programs and just maybe like one or two outcomes for each one of them. So for our power hour, club members in grades K through 12 who have read 7,000 books during power by the end of the 25-26 school year. Club members in grades 3 through 12 who have read 75,000 minutes during power hour by the end of the 25-26 school year. Another highlight is that 80% of the parents will emphasize that the importance of reading time for the child, for the child's overall development. Looking into the math program for our MBA masters from Angle Math, 80% of the club members will report that they are getting A's and B's in their courses. 60% of those club members will increase their confidence in math. 35% of those club members will increase their performance in the pre-test to the post-test. Jumping on to our leadership program, Torch Club, 90% of those club members will report that they feel that they can make a difference in their communities. Youth for Unity, 85% of those club members report an increased concern community in their NYOI survey.
Can make a difference in this community. Was there anything more specific about what they think they can do or what they want to do that would make a difference in their community?
I know a lot, just from pulling that, a lot of them wanted to do like projects that were a part of their community. As you can see in this picture right here on the bottom right, is that a lot of them wanted to do like picking up trash or participating in things that are helping their community outside of just HACA. Like if there's a nearby creek or there's in any kind of things that need help, nursing homes, that they wanted to go ahead and be a part of that.
Yeah. Volunteer work.
Yes.
Question. What percentage of your entire enrollment are of HACA residents? There are three sites. So let's take BTW for example. How many are going from HACA and how many from outside agencies coming to the same site? I never had a sense of that
actually.
So the Booker T. Washington is just for HACA residents.
Totally.
100%.
Okay. And what about the other two?
The same thing.
The same thing.
100% HACA use.
Right.
I don't think I knew that before. Okay.
We do have outside ones that want to come in, but it's kind of like we have to push them away because we're only just serving that community.
Would you all have capacity to add additional participants that were not HACA residents?
I think with the space that we have, I don't think we can.
And we almost don't want to, because we want to make sure that the resident services are focusing on our needs, right?
Our contract.
It's our contract, and also our needs are very different. We have special needs children. We have a higher capacity of special needs children with mental health and family issues than it compared to other families that probably live within a 5-mile radius.
I didn't say this last month, but I found your old presentation really interesting. I mean, I did not know that much about Boys and Girls Club. And obviously, we had such a significant partnership with you all.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of work went into those presentations. So thank you all for coming and doing that.
Well, my head of our digital inclusion and support. The new head of our Digital Inclusion and Workforce Program, John Espinoza, is a proud club member, former club member.
He is one of my club members. I've been in the organization 20 years, and I remember John, he's 7 years old, and I work with you guys, which is amazing. And, yeah, it's programs that, like, we're fighting for the kids here. It's a positive impact for all those kids to turn into an amazing adult. Yeah.
How Art is right up at the mic.
Jorge's folding away. I will be right up here. Yeah, just now.
Bravo.
Yeah.
So I think that is, I'm sorry, you had a question.
Yeah, I wanted to just talk a little bit about the demographic issues. And I noticed that we mentioned this before the meeting started, that your greatest participation comes from the middle school.
And when we get to high school, students have dropped off considerably. And I was wondering if you could consider any moves that might bring high school students back. I particularly worry about their reading levels as well, and the fact that they drop off generally at the 8th or 9th grade. What's happening to those people and how are they gaining college ready?
I think the for us, it, to your point, as in once they hit 8th grade, you're right, they tend to fade off. And so what we like to do is majority of those kids have, like, siblings that also come to the club. And so if we can't really get a hold of those kids, we'll talk to those siblings and still talk to those parents. And they're like, hey, how's little Johnny doing? How are they doing in school? And if there's any kind of buy-in that we can do to go ahead and bring them back, even if we can use them as in, like, junior staff, you know what I mean? Even though they're older, they can also, we can also train them to be, which is part of your PACA workforce thing that you guys have, kind of prep them for that and also preset as well. That pretty much helps out, you know, as much as possible. But as kind of what we talked earlier, I know, like, a big buy-in is food. Like, food really brings in those kids. So, right. Yeah, so you're saying if you feed them, they will come.
my sense is with the older kids, though, as you get older, you have other opportunities before the city as opposed to your younger kid. Because when you're 14, you know, all of a sudden, now you're playing sports in school.
Exactly.
You're not going to the boys and girls club or going to the YMCA. But I'm just thinking, when I grew up, you know, I went through, the YMCA was the big deal. I'm cutting it, especially the boys' club. Everybody went. But as we got older, you know, I started playing school basketball. I didn't go for the Y that much. I may go every other Saturday, or I just go and see a few friends. And then I had other things to do. And then others had jobs. And so as you get older, you have more opportunities to do other things. So you're not going. But so, I mean, to me, that's just sort of my life experience, because I know all of us, we used to, you know, it was just a ton of us, and I remember once a month we'd have this, I forget what they call it, but everybody sent them out Friday night, you know, and you know, the big kids would be there, and scary movies, and all sorts of crazy stuff, but, I mean, the whole place was just packed with, you know, a bunch of, you just love that.
Yeah.
You know, there are only a handful of big kids, but because I just noticed, I wouldn't see the older kids there as I got older because they don't, you know, don't play in sports in school, don't have college. So, you know, as kids get older, there are more opportunities for them, and they seek those out. Especially my sense of some of our kids, if they can get a job, they got to go get a job because they're helping with the income in the house. A friend of mine told me the worst thing he had in his household was when his kid turned 16 and started driving because there was no more family. There's no more family. You know, before then, everybody, you know, comes to the table, family dinners, but then all of a sudden kids are driving, they're going doing this, that, and the other. And he's like, I don't see my kid. We don't have family get together anymore because everybody's driving and doing their own thing. It changes the dynamic within a household.
I think a good thing that I noticed is that, you know, to your point is we're open until 7 o'clock for school year. So we're 3 to 7, Monday through Friday. And with those kids that are in those extracurricular activities, such as those high school students, is that we allow team time for those kids from 6 to 7. So that means that all the elementary kids are out by 6 o'clock. That's when they go home. And that's when we pretty much provide the club for them to be there for that hour, to have the club for themselves. So after those sports events or after those extracurricular activities, because of the relationships that they built with the staff, they enjoy to come in those team time that time and to go ahead and just come and play with the staff, whether it's, you know, game room, doing a sport, or even if they need help with homework. Because we're open that late, it's good to provide that extra hour for them to come and just, hey, relax, have a good time before you go home.
But, Tyra, that's a great observation you made, but I just know in my own life experience, as I got older, I stopped going to the YMCA because there were other things that just sort of took up that filled what they were providing.
I'm just looking for opportunities to get kids to make them and their parents. And when I say feed them, they will come. I used to parents that in order to participate in these programs, you're going to come to have a dinner. And you give them opportunities and let them know about career choices that they don't even know. And so I'm looking for those kinds of activities in which you can bring the parents and the kids and try to figure out a way for those parents to keep involved with in their high school activities and programs. Because as soon as you're saying they reach a certain age, they know everything, and you can't tell them everything. And it's not until you get about 21 or 22 you realize that the parents got smart all of a sudden. But we know we go through that type of thing. And so my concern is, how do we encourage parents and kids to see college as an opportunity? We cannot wait until their senior year and start talking to the art of college. And we're losing this whole, 4 years without any type of encouragement, without the kind of knowledge they really need to make informed decisions. So this is my concern.
Well, let me ask you, do we still have the AB Honor Roll program?
Oh, we do. Okay. So there are other programs outside of Boys and Girls Club. We've got the scholarship program. We've got the AB Honor Roll program, the Tennis program. And that's we have a touch point on a quarterly basis across all of our...
Well, and the more we can leverage all of these programs is what I'm looking at as well.
And we have a couple
of... So we're not in competition. We're trying to leverage resources.
And through community schools, we have the Compass College program as well.
Right.
So that also helps get an additional involvement with kids.
Okay, so with that and with your approval, staff recommends to renew the Boys and Girls Club contract for the next 2 years for the amount of $420,000.
So I'll move, and second. All in favor, is there further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Commissioner Apostoli, you voted in support? Great. You voted 4-0 and passed. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we're going to turn it over to Commissioner Carrington, who's going to walk us through a slate of items to Austin Affordable PFC and then Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and then we will pick them up on the HACA side. Great. Take it away.
So I think you all have a an instruction sheet in front of you on how we're going to handle these items. And you need to go to the back of this, before the report, the four tabs, 1, 2, 3, 4, and these are the Austin Affordable PFC, Public Finance Corporation.
Yeah.
So the meeting has been called to order. We have a certification of the quorum. Is there any public comment?
There's
none. No public comment. Then the next item is the consent agenda, which is to approve the minutes of the May 29, 2025 meeting. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. The first action item is item number 2, and it's resolution 00128. And it relates to intent to issue bonds, tax-exempt bonds, to provide financing for a multifamily residential rental development called the Decker Lane Apartment. And Suzanne, I think, is handling this one.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests. I just want my great pleasure to present Decker Lane. This is a new
partnership that if the resolution is approved, it will approve us to submit a bond application in the lottery this year. It does not, it doesn't tie us to anything other than submitting that bond application. If we do get a bond reservation, then we will come back to you for additional approval.
And Suzanne, before you go too much further, just some folks don't understand, I think, the lottery. Can you just quickly touch on the state sets aside bond authority, but there's not enough and we have to compete for it.
Yes.
And so we enter into a lottery. And some number of those projects will get funded. We'll get approval for bonds, and some won't. So we won't know definitively until that lottery gets held.
Yeah, and depending on how many apply, there will be a wait list, but you have to wait until more bonds are available as, you know, some projects fall through and return their bond reservation. And then in August, there's a collapse of, because there's different buckets of money. And then at one time during the year, a little bit later, they'll collapse all of those funds, and then they'll come, you know,
And to make it even more complicated, if you get if you get bond authority, permission to issue the bond, then there's a separate application to ask for tax credits. And every bond deal gets tax credits, 4% tax credits, layered on with it. And so soon you're going to be, a little later today, you're going to be asked on another item to let us apply for big tax credits. So it all syncs up.
Yeah, with Santa Rita, we split them up. We got the inducement in May, and then Ann presented the tax credit application today.
So as I said, this one is a new partnership with Roars. They are based out of Plymouth, Minnesota, and they were established in 2012. They have over 13,000 units developed in 14 states. They have several projects here in Texas, so they do have experience working in Texas and with governmental agencies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And their founding members were Kent and Brian Roars. And I did notice part of their executive team came over from Dominion, who we also partner with and who is a top developer. They're ranked number 12 in the National Multifamily Housing Council's 50 top developers and ranked number 10 on Affordable Housing Finance's Affordable Housing Developers. They have a one-stop shop where they have a development team, they have their own general contractor arm, and they also have their own management. In just a little background, they've tried, you know, they've approached us in the past, and we just haven't had a property that fit with our portfolio. Just recently, one of the head of the general contractor arm at one of my other partners moved over to Boris. And he contacted me, and he was like, hey, do you want to try again? We have another property. So he reintroduced me to the development side, and this one looks like it's a good deal for us. This would be 202 family units located at 7400 Decker Lane. It's just like a mile from Decker Elementary and Middle School. There are three bus stops around, half a mile from them. The property would be 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units with 50 and 60% AMI affordability. They would be using portfolio resident services, the third party to provide their social services. Those social services would include, you know, after school tutoring, health and nutrition services, technology access, and learning, and then financial literacy and workforce development. We have worked with portfolio resident services on several of our other properties,
especially with LDG, until LDG decided to bring on their own resident service coordinators in-house. But Portfolio Resident Services has been really good to work with, and they were phenomenal during that ICE apocalypse, helping us, you know, check on the residents and make sure everything was okay.
Okay, and are they based in Houston?
Portfolio
Residential Services?
I believe so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using them in how many properties now?
We were using them on about 18. I think we're probably down to about 6 now.
And it's nothing to do with their service. It's just, like I said, LPG.
That other people are picking up their services. I'm delighted to see these developers offer these types of programs for the residents, especially after school tutoring and things of the sort.
That's very important to us, yeah. And especially since we're so close to the elementary and the middle school.
But it really suggests to us that our model is being used in what I call private sector development. And I'm excited about the whole concept. I did have another question, and I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to raise it. But I was very delighted to see this new addition to our formatting of these items, and that is where the developer presents what I call the cost-benefit analysis of the project and why they're worthy, and highlighting what I think is the important part of selling a property and selling the concept. And at some point, somebody is going to explain to me this whole capitalization tax evaluations and the 50% benefit thing. And I noticed that several of the new formatting items include this now, and I want to understand the history of it and why we're using it and why it's a good thing, number one, to have some writing for all of these projects, and number two, who is our audience for it?
Well, a little background from the last meeting or the meeting before. Richie did ask us to start adding this information. This is our first turn at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the developers prepare these for us. If you want us to tweak them in any way, we're still kind of trying to get that final model down. And
we will definitely. We've already, you've seen four different versions of this in today's book. You're going to see as we increasingly move to more of a template that will require them to fill out. But we wanted to see what they could produce. And so this was very helpful. But we need to streamline it a bit in the sense of being a little bit more clear about what the public benefits are for anyone who should read it or be focused on upcoming legislation. And so you'll see improvements made.
So one would be at our next board meeting maybe we would come in and do like a work session 30 minutes in advance.
Okay.
And that way you can walk us through and explain for the board, I don't want you to say Tyron and Mary, but for the board, so you can walk through and explain each one of these, and since they all look a little different, but what we're trying to achieve, and then you can, at that point in time, you can tell them again a little bit more about the history, and we can talk about it, but one, this is, you know, something that, you know, everything we do, we put in writing and stuff, just open records, sometimes, you know, there are people who have been asking questions, well, if you're giving it back to Jensen, what's the public benefit to that? You know, what's the public get to return?
I assume that this format is an attempt to address it. I still want
better understanding of this whole 50% benefit.
And that's why I said we will have, yeah, have a work session in advance of the board meeting next time, whether it's 45 minutes or 30 minutes in advance. So you can walk through, talk through the terminology, because the big part of understanding anything is understanding what the terminology is and then how you apply it.
Maybe we can get a little, some sheets and stuff that it's kind of explained step by step.
I will definitely appreciate it. I'm sure that my fellow board members will as well.
Yeah, and I think what we see is a combination of what our chair has talked about, but also what the legislature is talking about. Oh, and so the time has now come for us to really refine that and be real clear about what the benefits are of the tax exemption and how it's being used.
And I think that it benefits us as board members as well, because we certainly get questions, very casual kinds of questions, but to be able to explain the cost-benefit analysis of a lot of these undertakings, I think would be very useful.
And Suzanne, I might like to request, I mean, Portfolio Resident Services is who I think they are. They're in Houston. They've been around for 30 or so years.
Melinda Frazier?
Ellie Fanning
has
taken over sort of from her father. But, I mean, they've been around like 30 years. And they've taken on different characters, different activities within their organization. Very well respected. Really grown the organization. And I think it might be interesting if you could get whomever, I don't know if it's Ellie or someone else, to maybe come and spend 10 minutes to the board talking about who they are, what they do, how they approach providing these services.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'd be really helpful.
I can definitely do that.
Are there any more questions? Are we ready to take a vote then? So this is on resolution 00128, and it is the application for private activity bonds with the Texas Bond Review Board, which is the state agency that allocates the 4% credit. Do I hear a move? Motion. Mary moves. Okay. Second. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving resolution 00128?
Aye.
I wanted to look up Portfolio Resident Services, so I took it off airplane mode. Okay, so the motion passed. So the next item on the agenda for Austin Affordable PFC is item number 3. Which is a resolution 00129 declaring intent to issue tax-exempt bonds financing for multifamily residential development, and the name of this one is Horseshoe Flat. And again, this would be an application that's going to the Texas Bond Review Board.
Yes.
Suzanne, you're up.
The resolution that you would approve today is just solely so that we can submit an application for the bond lottery. It does not tie you to anything with this. If we get an award, then we will come back to you at least one or two more times. This is a partnership with NRP. It would be our ninth partnership with them. This is located off of Highway 130 and Blue Bluff Road, which is just south of Highway 290. It's a really cool subdivision out there. And when you go out there, there's only single family residents. There may be one multifamily property, maybe two out there. And so I'm really excited to get multifamily out there, especially. This is going to be 324 units, 1, 2, and 3, and 4 bedrooms. So you have other options for those
those people that, you know, normally would need a single family residence, we have four bedroom apartments that they would be able to fit into. The affordability is 50, 60, and 70% area median income. And they will be spread across all 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms evenly. This is in the Manor ISD, Lagos Elementary, Decker Middle School, and Manor High School services. NRT uses community housing resources for their resident services. They are based out of San Antonio. They have a phenomenal after-school program. They offer first-time homebuyer education, financial literacy, and adult education courses. And they have really been good partners. We have them on all of the tax credit properties that we partner with NRT on. And they've done a fabulous job.
Okay, one question. I did not see here the size of the property at the acreage.
The acreage?
It's in the resolution, isn't it?
Just the board doesn't try that we don't have the right address. That's not the correct address of the property. It's further out on off of Highway 130 and there's a
you know what, I don't have the acreage, but I know that there's going to be a lot of green space. It's a very big lot. Mm-hmm. It's several acres.
I kind of thought it would be the way you were describing the area.
I mean, it's that many units. I think the address might be in the application.
If you go to the back of...
or the resolution.
Item number 3.
We're in the resolution. I don't see it. But
yeah, it would be.
Page 28.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
Part of the benefit analysis.
The back of the
yeah, I'm looking at.
Can you get hold of the address if you can plug it in to Google Maps?
There's not an address. It's just Blue Bluff Road and Highway 130.
Yeah. There's a dirt right now. They gave me coordinates. I should have said that.
It probably doesn't have an address right now.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. That's why I was, you know, I was trying to get. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the scope of the interest.
There's a lot of developable land out there. So that's why I'm excited, because that's starting to build up a lot here. And I think we're getting in right at the right time if we're able to get this one going.
Okay,
well,
any more questions for Suzanne? Are we ready to vote on Resolution 00129?
Yeah, let me ask you a question, Suzanne. So, Suzanne, what was the feedback when you asked the applicant to submit the benefit analysis?
Actually, NRP was like, oh, what? We do them for everybody. So mm-hmm. Let me get you, we'll do it. And then they asked if we needed a third party to do it. And I said, this is just an inducement, and we're trying to, you know, kind of flesh out what we want. So I had them do. They were excited about it. Lourdes was excited about it too. I mean, they had it to me within a day.
Okay.
We were actually intrigued when they talked about the idea of a third party entity, because we may want to verify the data that they're submitting just to make sure that it really does live up to the economic assumptions. So
right.
The developer has a tendency to sort of, wants to present the best case.
Well, they do a lot of 303 and 394. They're already having to engage those.
Because NRP does a lot of 303 and 394 deals, they've got to do the cost-benefit analysis.
I think they have.
And then Roars, they just kind of acted like it was something normal that they would be asked about. So they,
it has to be information. It's information they have.
Mm-hmm. So I think everybody got the pulse on the new legislation that's coming out, so they're starting to.
They recognize it's to their benefit.
Well,
no pun intended, but.
Yeah, I was just thinking that if we were going to look at trying to find a standardized template,
mm-hmm.
would be something we wanted to visit with Houston and Dallas and San Antonio about. So we all are, we kind of, I mean, regardless of what dynamics of your project is, but the benefit analysis, you probably ask the same question.
Yes.
And Carl and Ben and Ron and I were on a call just before we came to here with Houston, Fort Worth, El Paso, and others talking about this real question.
I'm really excited that they're going to put a model together. I think it's great if all of Texas uses the same model.
If Houston in particular, it's kind of like New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah.
It'll work anywhere.
Do we envision that as we move forward with requesting the information on the analysis, that we would give the format to the developers and that they would then use our format to put in the information? I mean, is that the goal?
Eventually, yeah. In about 6 months' time, we would get to that. I mean, we may allow them to individualize it, but it'll have certain few things that they'll have to put into it that will meet our requirements to justify the project.
And it'll be easier for us to ask for it if we have a successful template.
But so far, you haven't gotten any pushback.
Okay.
They want it.
And if you do, too bad.
They want to work with us. I mean, NRC's been a really good partner. Roars is excited to start the partnership with us. The next one that you'll see, Generation Housing, they've been a phenomenal partner. So I think they know that as a governmental agency, we need, there are things we need,
gotta have,
and they're going to do whatever that is.
Yeah, like I'm just, I went back over this late last night. One of the things I'm thinking about is, like with the NLC deal, it talks about being close to the various employers. And for me, I would just like to think about in terms of have a little bit more specificity. If the development is a mile or 2 miles, because that way you can translate it. Even if somebody is driving a car, they're not driving a car from the domain all the way out to the expo center. So you're reducing the wear and tear on the road, pollution. So they're I guess in economics they call it the externality of the other benefits that would come into play. Because in a city like Austin, I mean, transportation, being able to reduce the number of miles that somebody's driving also speaks to their mental well-being as well.
I think one of the developers, I think it was the Everett property, did exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And talked about the savings in terms of miles driving and all of that.
Because, to me, this whole definition of a public benefit, I mean, if you're talking about, the public benefit should be the amount of units you build, the reduction in rents and stuff. But for me, it's more of an individual benefit. To me, the public benefit, if I live, off of Cypress Springs Road, and I got to drive downtown, the less people I got to compete with to use MOCAI, to me, that's the public benefit. Because that's the public, and I think in terms of public benefit, more of the broader as opposed to the individual. And so that the whole definition of what is public benefit. And that's why I think the broader we can make this in terms of capturing information like that. Because, because I have neighbors who would say, they got a rent reduction, but I don't see how that's a public benefit because I'm the public. I'm not going to say anything from it. So what? But to the extent we can talk in a broader term, you can talk about the benefits to more people, and it's easier to sell.
I'd like to tell you something.
Yeah.
Let's
we can move. Yeah.
Let's take action on this one, and then the next one is the one that Tara is talking about. So this is resolution 00129, and it's to give us authorization to apply for private activity bonds with the Texas Bond Review Board, and that is for Horseshoe Flats Partners. Do I hear a motion? Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed. Okay. Now, item 4, which is 00130, and this is the Cameron Highline apartment. And this one has moved along. So this is some authorization to carry out the financing of this multifamily rental development. Suzanne?
I am extremely excited to present this one to you. We started by presenting this to you for an inducement resolution back in September of 2023. We've been trying to get the financing structure and everything to go, and it's taken us this long, and it's going to be such a great property. Generation Housing Partners, they are my partners. They're based out of Dallas. They're very well known in the tax credit community. We have one other partnership with them, Heritage Estates at Wells Branch, which is a senior property. This one is going to be a family property. AMT recently took over the management of Heritage Estates, and Generation was so impressed with AMT. They've asked them to come on to this one when it's built. So they'll do the lease-up and everything. We're really excited about that. This one is located at 1124 Clayton Lane, and it's just down Clayton Lane from our bridge at Windsor Tower property, which is a workforce housing. So we can kind of partner together, and they can send us the affordable ones, and then we can send the people that are overqualified for ours, and I think that'll be really great. And another little tidbit, our partner on Bridge at Windsor Tower is the JCI Residential Group. They actually own the land that they're selling to Generation for Cameron Highline. So it's all in the family. This is 227 family units. There will be 30, 40, 50, 60, and 80% AMI on these units. The units will be efficiency, 1 and 2 bedrooms. And there will be a 3,500 square foot resident services classroom. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we intend to do a lot of programming for our residents and also the community. So any kids at Windsor Tower, if they want to come over, they can definitely come and share. We will be using Housing Support Services Alliance for the resident services. This nonprofit is run by Patricia Murphy, who had previously worked for CDHCA. We have her at several of our other properties. AMT has even pulled her in on some of theirs, and she's doing a phenomenal job. They will offer after-school tutoring, summer camps, family services, and outreach for at-risk youth. They'll have health and wellness classes, financial literacy, tax preparation, homeownership classes, and fitness and nutrition seminars. This property is in the Austin Independent School District and Harris Elementary, Webb Middle School, and Northeast Early College High School will be serving this property. As we said, this has been around a long time, so this will be the last time you see it if you are to approve it, because we will be able to move on to closing. Bank OZK
is the construction lender. Citibank is the permanent lender. Austin Housing Finance Corporation, which is the city, has given us $7 million in RHDA funding to fill that gap. And then Raymond James is our equity investor. And this is the first time we've worked with Raymond James, and I'm excited to have another investor in our fold. Huh?
They're actually out of Florida.
Yeah.
But they've got an office here. Mm-hmm. They're all over.
Yeah, they're all over.
Who are you working with, Suzanne?
There's so many parties.
I know. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. So.
I'll let you know, though.
Okay.
And we are getting 83 cents for the tax credit, which is probably pretty good. It's what's going in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, for 4%. Yeah.
Days we used to get $1 or $1.02.
Dollar
days are gone for a while.
$1.16. On Goodrich.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Is there any more discussion?
Okay, Cara.
I just wanted to point out, as I was trying to do with the previous item, that in the public benefit analysis section of this one, this is page 32 of 33, under the public benefit breakdown, section B speaks to the advantages of the location and the fact that there are various close by facilities that would prevent the need for driving and things of that sort. So that's the kind of thing that you were referring to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be sure to include those in future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. If we could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could figure out a way to get rid of MOPAC and I-35 in terms of the driving, it would really be accomplished.
Let me tell you, it took me an hour and a half to get home yesterday, and I live 16 miles from here.
I went up MOPAC at
I was not
4 o'clock.
Okay.
But it's unbelievable. It just continues.
Okay. Tuesday, I was in your neck of the woods because I had to go to a board meeting. And I left Westlake at 10 o'clock, trying to get back to my downtown office. It took me 90 minutes because there were two wrecks.
Oh.
Well, that always complicates things. I don't think there were any wrecks on MOPAC yesterday. It was just lots of cars. Okay.
This card just notes, it says this one because this will be the last time you'll see it, and you're going to vote on this one 3 times today. This will be the first one you guys need to see each of the other two board games.
So
we've gone through it in detail.
We won't have any discussion. No more discussion. 00130, issue sale and delivery of bonds, blah, 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 and allow us to close this transaction. Motion?
So moved.
Carl?
And I'm a second.
Not Carl. Second. Any more discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution passed. Thank you, Suzanne, for all of your work on this.
Mr. Sure we can close the board.
And thank our developers for giving us these models to look at.
So, as Mr. Gerber has reminded me, we need to close the Austin Affordable PFC, and we will do that at 1:50. Do I hear a motion? Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor? Okay. So the meeting is closed at 1:50 on September the 11th. Now we back up and go to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and we have called the meeting to order. We've established the quorum. We've established there is no public communication. Correct, Ms. Media? Okay. Consent agenda, which is approving the minutes of the board meeting held on May the 29th, 2025. Mm-hmm. I move. Mary second. All those in favor? Discussion?
vote? Everybody's okay. There was no discussion, right? I skipped over discussion. Okay. Thank you all. All right, the first action item is...
Go to these two real quick so we can get out of the way so Ron and Garrett can come in after.
So this is resolution 00128, in intent to issue financing, issue bonds, private activity bonds for a multifamily residential rental development, and this is for Decker Lane and the filing of an application for, we've already done that, haven't we? Yeah, let me go all the way back. Sorry. Bill number two. Okay. So this is the Everett 00274. And this is to approve the documents necessary to close this transaction. So, Ron?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, staff, guests, Mr. Gerber, everybody, thank you for indulging us today with this project. We have an opportunity here to step in on a property that is near complete, all completed, brand new with our partner CWS. And before I even get into the deal, I wanted to introduce you to Jarrett Sullivan. Jarrett and I have been working together for, I don't even know how long, I think I hear it back then, but I thought I would let you all meet Jarrett, let him talk a little bit about CWS, our relationship, how it started, and I can also dive into that too, and how we've grown to get to this deal, and then we'll talk a little bit more about specifics.
Sure, yes, yes. What it means, what it stands for? Yes, ma'am, that's Clayton Williams Sherwood, founded originally in 1969 in Newport Beach, California. So, Mr. Sherwood is still the chairman of our board and CEO of the company, actually.
And I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Sherwood in
some
conference in Vegas.
That's right.
Tremendous individual.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, happy to be here before you today. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I work with CWS Apartment Homes, CWS Capital Partners, kind of reference one and the same. Locally based here in Austin. Office at 183 in Mopac. We are a multifamily owner-operator with a majority presence in Austin. We have about 7,000 units in our portfolio in Austin, 25, 26 properties. And we also operate nationwide in 12 markets, and we have a total portfolio size of about 31,000 units. As I mentioned, the company is about 55 years old. I've been there for 12 and a half years, since 2013, which I believe was the year CWS actually sold, or 2015, okay, Center Ridge, which was my understanding that the first institutional Class A multifamily asset that Ron worked to acquire. 2015.
Did it include Tech Ridge also?
Center Ridge and Tech Ridge, that's right.
Ron had to remind me of that the other day. Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. So we go way back, and we've stayed in touch with Ron and team over the years and followed y'all's activities and vice versa, and are really excited to now be working together on one of our CWS's newest development communities called the Everett. In Northwest Austin, the aerial on the screen unfortunately is a bit outdated, but if you have your
packet, you should have the at least if you look at the community benefit summary, you'll see some very very good pictures. And I did have some other pictures queued up before, but I don't think we're going to get that. But you'll see some of the things there. And we can talk a little bit about the property. But I just wanted to meet yes, it's 34 and a half acres.
How far from the people?
And it's directly across the street almost directly across the street from the Valente, which is another asset CWS used to own and sold that to us as well. So knowing the success we've had at the Valente and seeing the need there really inspired us to dig deeper into looking at this property. We've been working on this for many, many months, vetting the grid, making sure it would fit in our portfolio. I've toured it so many times, it's absolutely just gorgeous. It was just completed this month, basically 100% complete. We are, right now, they're about 46% occupied, 48% occupied. It's 376 units. We've got one bedroom, two bedrooms, and three bedrooms. The mix is there on your summary. What was also really neat is the unit sizes are extremely large compared to the market and other properties that we have toured, bought, seen, and looked at. We're really, really, really excited about that. What we're doing is we're actually modifying the construction loan that CWS uses to allow us to step in as a general partner. And then once we reach stabilization, which will be 90-something percent for so many months.
Right, about 92%.
Yep. Then we'll go and convert that construction loan to a permanent loan. And we'll come back to you for that approval as well. I did want to say that of the 191 units that are currently leased right now, out of the 376, working with Jarrett's team, we've approximated 25% of those units, or 48, qualify for 60 and 80% EMI units already. And I think what else we've talked at length about, again, and you've heard me say this before on properties that we've taken over that were just in lease up, it really gives us the ability to get those affordable units in immediately and not wait for leases to expire when properties are full. So that will be a priority of CWS and their management team to get those units.
Well, for a number of reasons, CWS is a long-term holder of multifamily communities. That's kind of our main focus. So that's one of the main synergies we've kind of noticed with our groups over the years. For example, CWS developed the Marquee at Ladera Vista off Jollyville Road in 1997, and we still own it. So we've got a really broad spectrum of housing options across our portfolio held over the long term, ranging from 90 product to brand new. And so I think with that long term mentality, it makes a lot of sense to partner together. Where we can provide long term stable housing options here at the Everett, creating new affordable units in a zip code and area where that is a significant barrier to entry, we can allow long-term residents to stay there at the community, allow their kids to be raised in a couple of the top school districts in Austin without the need to move. And so as long-term owners, that's fantastic. That stability is definitely one of the things we try to keep at our community. In August, correct.
It was a really interesting conversation when we were at the conference and we sat with the founder, Mr. Sherwood, and what an incredible philanthropist he is and his commitment to doing more for communities. And I had never met him before. He's very sincere. Just one of the nicest men you'll be. And we started talking about this idea. And I think it resonated a little bit in him that you guys have been very successful, done a lot of stuff here. And I think he asked a lot of questions about what we're doing, how much we've grown since Separation Center Ridge and all this thing. And I think it really was significant to him that, why aren't we doing something? I mean, this really is a great mission. and we just never have had the opportunity, we never really approached it from that angle. They helped us buy buildings. They actually, Second Center Realty, we weren't even the highest offer, yet they still went out on a limb and gave us a chance to buy that property, and it's been successful. In fact, we'll see Second Center Realty probably next month when we refinance it, because it's been 10 years. It's going to have to be refinancing the loan again. But I think that was what triggered our continued, when I got back, we started talking more and more. And so I felt really comfortable moving forward on this one a little bit. That's my take.
For this property in particular, Mr. Sherwood actually has a significant personal investment in the property. So in the back of his mind, he's always looked at this site, you know, from when it was just a raw, undeveloped homestead, to now as kind of a generational asset that he would like to keep around for a really long time. So, it's very special in that regard. It's like delivering, you know, brand new apartment buildings on what would have been a 1995 style development canvas in the site. You know, you can find communities along 620 that have similar acreage, but they're all much older. This is one of the last big sites like that in the area.
I think the other exciting thing too that we've talked about in length, as we get stabilized and start leasing up, is just the extensive marketing that we're going to go with the shopping center and with the retail center next door. It's walkable to there. Everything's walkable there. I think you see in your summary, there's so many different options there, including the big HEB Plus, which we're starting to talk to them about getting them some preferred units and, you know, making sure that, you know, all those workforce employees have the ability to understand that, hey, now we can walk across the parking lot instead of driving. And it is a very high opportunity area. So we're really excited, and the property is just absolutely phenomenal that we can afford to come, you know, put affordability in. I'm excited about talking about the 50% cut, and I was prepared to go into this. We'll do this in October. We'll say this again, but the 50% cut space is just a tool that really came out of the legislature. But whatever you're taking off the tax rolls, they want to see 50% of that savings that's not going to the public in rent reduction. And if it doesn't meet that test, in their eyes, it's not affordable. You know, and we can argue this, you know, the philosophy of that, or do we agree or not agree. But actually, in House Bill 21, it ended up, I think, tiered. Every 2 years, it increases to a little bit more tiered. I think it's half at 45. In this case, we did it up to 50, and we hit that mark, you know, over 50 in total rent reduction. And that just tells you we didn't go into a neighborhood that rents are 50% AMI already, and we're just taking something off the tax roll, and there's no monetary benefit, I shouldn't say, in terms of public benefit. So that was really exciting on this property as well, but CWS will manage it. It's their asset, and we're very comfortable with this. And they're tremendous to work with. I've gotten to meet a lot of them, and I'm really excited to keep them on site, keep the stability there. Garrett agreed to put the bridge name in front of the exit for me. That was a little tweaking at the CWS motto, that's our branding. but we're going to work on that as well. And so we're excited about that. And again, this will be a simple transaction, stepping into the construction loan, and then documents will very easily convert to a perm. But you will see this again, convert to a perm as long as you're approved to move forward on that.
Not really. I think there was maybe a multifamily community in Midland that Steve Sherwood really liked. He toured it, and it had the Everett. So it had a nice ring to it. I mean, it was unique. We hadn't named the property in Austin the Everett yet.
Well, I think we did a good job.
There's
a little bit of give on a couple of things.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, who are you all talking to at ACB?
Just a fire.
in my marketing team's court, but so I don't know.
Okay.
And we want to wait till this is approved to reach out and really engage in a partnership here.
Okay.
Was this property, did you all put this out through an RFP, or was this a connection with us and CWS and say, hey, we have this property we're interested in perhaps selling to you or transferring to you? So how did this transaction come about?
Well, actually, I think we toured Ron at the property 3 years ago, like right when we broke ground.
Mm-hmm.
We grabbed lunch just to catch up at Rudy's down on 620 and told Ron, hey, I've got this project that just broke ground. You want to come take a walk? And so ever since then, it's kind of been this, hey, well, I wonder if we could partner on this thing. I know you've already started construction, but so it's really just evolved through informal, catch up over time. We didn't put out any formal RFP or the ownership, the investor base is not changing. There's still be no change there to the investors, the ownership.
Our goal is to target 10% of the units at 60 and 40% of the units at 80. I know Jared and I talked about, our need to try and do more deeper affordability, and I think the key right now is to get stabilized. That's an important piece of the puzzle. And both from the social programming side that we talked about what we can bring to that property after we have a better assessment of what the residents look like. Jared was ready to go. He's like, we need to get this approved first. So I mean, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. So I think you'll see, and probably by the time we come back to you give you more information about some of the programming and some of the communication things that we're going to do there. Different demographic, which is a little bit higher. This is not a tax credit property. This is workforce housing property. But we hope to, as we did in Valente, we never anticipated doing the deep of affordability of Valente, and it's incredibly affordable. And I think over time you'll probably come back to see that transition over here. But it takes some time.
Good question. As I went back and looked at the testing entities and the tax rates, there's been a lot of discussion about all the taxes that are going to be raised, the county, hospital district. To the extent those go up, doesn't that provide a greater benefit for the project? The tax rates going up, given that our participation in makes it even a greater benefit for the high tax.
Because of us being able to remove that though,
yeah.
From them. I'm sure everybody that comes to us looks at that, that's the biggest benefit to us is that we take that off.
Well, I'm just saying, when you look at this, but then all of a sudden, as I was saying earlier, I was at another board meeting and there were a bunch of people squawking, but they had done the math on it and they just said it seemed much too easy. This is 30% of the
compared to if you look at these tax rates on some of the ones that Suzanne presented, we're at 196, I think, is the overall tax rate.
That's correct.
I think the other ones were in 213s or 222s. From a percentage of the tax rate, I thought it was pretty low tax rate. But it's significant. All we can do is show you what we can do and what the numbers look like. We're going to continue to keep looking at these high opportunity areas where at least the monetary benefit of rent reductions to the market is significant. I think we've all said a long time ago there's no benefit to doing this in an area that's already struggling to get 50% rent, and we're taking off tax dollars and not providing it. It doesn't really do anything for the property. We've turned a lot of this down, so I think we can provide a significant help here. especially with the amount of retail and opportunities that, you know, like 10, 15 minutes from, you know, a lot of us making toys and not ready to go around with that. So, I feel this is a really good fit for us.
Question. These are three stories.
Correct.
Are there elevators?
Three of the buildings actually have elevators. I believe it's 126 units in total. So that's kind of unique. We've never put elevators in three-story buildings before. But yes, three of the buildings here.
Why did you decide to do it in the Everett?
That's a good question. I think initially we thought, you know, maybe that would appeal to a slightly older demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Empty nester doesn't want to walk up three flights of stairs, but would enjoy living in a community like this. And this 376 unit still provides for a bit of variety. And, you know, ultimately, I think if you could put elevators in all the buildings and make it work economically, then you probably would. But three is probably the expensive.
So is there any requirement, Suzanne, when you go above two stories?
Over three.
Over three. Four elevators.
And their elevators are not cheap. No.
Not only to install, but then to maintain.
That's true. That's true.
It's
yeah.
The maintenance part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. We're ready? Okay. Then what we're being asked to approve is Resolution 00274, and that is for the Everett to facilitate the acquisition and execute all of the documents necessary to allow us to consummate this transaction. Carl moves. Howard seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Then the next is item three, which is the Horseshoe Flat and Decker Lane. And two properties on this one. We're not going to divide them in the future. But on this one, on the resolution that you approve, assuming that you approve it, 00275, to execute any and all documents necessary to place the housing tax credit application for Horseshoe Flat and Decker.
Yeah, I just wanted to apologize for combining those. I didn't realize it would make such a confusion. But we will separate them from now on. We just remembered Commissioner Bailey used to go, can we not just combine everything on one thing? So we were trying, but we will separate them.
And it wasn't that confusing once we figured out what was going on. I'm reading through it, and it's like, wait a minute, two properties. Can we do that? I was concerned from a resolution standpoint, because my understanding had always been that each resolution, each property stood and was combined with a resolution. So in this case, we have one resolution that addresses two properties.
Correct, and TDHPA allows the combined one, but the Bond Review Board does not, so.
All right.
Second home
moves and Mary second. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the resolution passes. And the last one is item four, which is Cameron Highline. And this is resolution 00276. And this is Suzanne again.
This one is our final. Time if you are to approve, then we will move on to close, and this gives us the authorization to sign documents in closing.
So move.
Second. Mary second. All those in favor? Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed?
Okay, motion passes. Suzanne, when do you, what's the timeline for closing, actually closing?
Well, because we've had the site under control for so long, our seller has given us a deadline. We close by October 4th or he pulls the land. So we're going to close before October 4th.
And that's doable for us.
Yes, it is. With Sarah's help and Bill Walters' help. Yeah.
Okay.
So that we have a couple.
All right. So the lawyer's comfortable. Okay. We've approved number 5, Santa Rita. So that finishes the business of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And we will adjourn the meeting at 2:17. Your motion?
So moved.
Second? Any opposed? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The meeting is now closed at 2:17. Well, since we've closed that, I guess we need to ask Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, going back to item number.
All right, so we're at item number 3, right?
This item number 3 is resolution number 2911 for the Board of Takes. Following actions with regard to the effort that you've heard about, 1, to acquire the site of development, 2, to lease the development site, 3, to own the development, and 3, other such actions necessary if you want to carry out this resolution. President of the file.
So moved.
Currently moved after 12 seconds. Any further discussion, Commissioners? All in favor say aye.
And I, too, am excited about this property because it's real close to where I live.
Passing by a vote of 4-0.
All right.
Conflict of interest. You can't move, Suzanne.
Item number 4 is resolution number 2912.
This is the Board of Commissioners. We are asking you all to approve the issuance by Affordable TFC multifamily housing revenue bonds and governmental notes to Cameron Highland Apartments, approving the form and substance of and authorizing the execution delivery documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing of such multifamily rental residential development and containing other provisions relating to the subject. This is the final time you see Cameron Highland.
So moved.
Currently moved after 12 seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. That's the last item we have. Is there need for an executive session? Commissioners, in front of you have a calendar of upcoming events. I would draw to your attention to 3 things. National Night Out is on October 7th at all of our Haka properties. If you're interested in joining with neighbors at the Haka properties, let us know. Our FSS graduation ceremony. Generally, we get they'll come drop by, but it's also good opportunity for neighbors just to meet neighbors. And sometimes it's the police department, the EMT. Usually the police do show up. Fire department. Oh yeah, yeah.
See the kids get the call on the fire engine.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's turn on the siren and the firehouse. So join us if you're interested and available on National Night Out. On October 9th at 11 a.m., we have our family self-sufficiency graduation ceremony. Chairman and I just signed graduation certificates. Come join us as we celebrate those graduates. And then our next board meeting.
How many do we have, do you know?
40?
Yeah, 40.
40-ish?
Yes,
okay.
We signed a lot. And then the last thing is, with your indulgence, on October 16th, we're going to move the board meeting to start at 9 a.m. here at the central office. From 9 to 9:30, we're going to cover a lot of stuff. And then we're going to retire to the third floor of this building. I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. 11:30, we're going to set out to the top of the garage, where we'll have a tent set up, and we will celebrate 25th anniversary of Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. I'm delighted to say that we have a special panel coming to
talk about the origin story. Kyle will be sharing the story of the creation of SACC. Jim Hargrove is going to be here to celebrate that. Pilar Sanchez had a big hand in it. Anne and Michael Cummings, they'll also be here to sort of moderate that discussion. Orlando Cabrera will be here as well. We should be able to with the other things on the agenda. Yeah. There's not a lot on the agenda now.
For the what, Tara?
So we suggested about coming.
Okay. For the public benefit analysis.
Our hope is we'll be able to do it at the next one. We're going to work through the schedule. We've got to do our audit in the next four meetings. We've got the property budget that has to be done in the next meeting. We need to ratify one of the fire units that we should be easy to do. We may have FMRs coming up. And then there's some things in my evaluation. So we're going to get a lot of stuff to do that.
So we were planning on 9:30, right?
Nine a.m. Yeah, so that would mean that we could probably go in at 9:30 or 8:30. Okay. All right. Hi, Sarah. All right. Okay, so what we'll do is move it to the November meeting. Don't think we've got other real estate deals coming to you on October. But those won't have the same.
So before you vote
on another thing regarding whether the 50% test, you'll get an explanation of what it is.
I can
vote.
I've got partial explanation here.
And I think maybe in November we should look at maybe set aside some time for a board retreat to actually have a few hours to really cover some of these items from the day. Or not.
We can discuss it. I know Tara needs to go, and I gotta be pretty quick with it. So, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. There's a motion by Commissioner Apsola, taken by Commissioner Carrington. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned officially at 2:24 p.m. on Thursday, September 11th, 2025.